This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 331, brought to you by the Summit City Comic Con and iFanboy members like you.
She's a primitive girl. She says it herself. She cuts to the chase, yeah, like nobody else. If you say how you're doing, she'll say I'm doing well. She's a primitive girl, she says it herself.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 331. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Did you forget for a second?
Yeah. I almost said I'm Connor Kilpatrick.
You can take that on for a while if you want. We'll swap one of those weird.
It would be like Freaky Friday. That'd be excellent.
Yeah.
You'd be like, get me the fuck out of here.
What did I get myself into?
You'd be like, you get up how early? And Ron Richards is here with me.
I'm not switching with anybody.
You love yourself too much.
Yes.
iFanboy.com is our website about comic books. We started it because we read comic books and we like comic books and we can't stop talking about them. Every week we read a bunch of them. One of us has the job of picking their favorite out of the stack, the best one that they read that week. That is called the Pick of the Week. And they write about it on the website. Then we come here. We start the show off talking about that. We name the whole show after it, but it's really only like 10 minutes. Then we talk about other books from the week, answer some questions, yada, yada, yada. Before we know it, time's up, and we've all had a good time and learned something.
Did
hopefully.
You just yada, yada the show?
Awesome. I did.
See you next week.
But the thing is that the yada, yada was in my vocabulary before that episode.
Sure it was. Yeah, you were there before sci-fi.
My mom used to say it. I swear.
Your pirate jokes in college.
Right.
No, that was completely. Also, by the way, that was 20 plus years ago. Pick of the week, spoilers is what could be a part of what we're talking about because
it wasn't 20 plus years ago.
No, it wasn't. It was 16 years ago.
Yeah. That would put us in college when we were 13, 14.
That was while we were in college. That one, that episode. Other ones, yes.
Anyway, not relevant. Spoilers are relevant.
They're not, though, is the point. Unless they are, in which case they could be coming. Watch your ass.
Yep.
I'm gonna be more vague about the spoiler warning so that people be like, you didn't say anything. Well, we did. You just weren't paying attention. Ron?
In the subtext.
Yeah. Just saying, sometimes things are going to happen. You might not want to know about it. That's enough. You have the pick of the week, Ron.
I did have the pick of the week. Man, I had like 30 books this week. This is a lot came out this week. And I kind of – this is kind of a week of self-discovery and revelation for me. as...
God, how long have you been in San Francisco?
No, but as I was reading through my comics, and we'll talk about this a little more as we get to the other books that came out this week, but I realized that, like, personally for me, where I'm at as a comic reader, you know, I really feel as if the books that I'm really connecting with and the books that I'm really excited about are the ones that are really unlike anything that I've read before. Are really, you know, like I'm really digging on new ideas and new kind of, you know, just new stuff, new concepts in comics. And while, you know, and not to take away from Avengers vs. X-Men or Batman or anything else is going on, because there's some great stuff going on in superhero books, I after 20 plus years, I'm kind of getting to the point where, okay, well, you know, like I kind of want something different. I kind of want something else. And
welcome, Ron.
Yes,
welcome.
Yes. Well, no, which is – but the thing is I've always had that part of me. You know what I mean? Like it's – you know, I've always had an interest in indie books, and I've always had a you know, like a I've always wanted to have a corner of the comics that I read to be something different and something else. But lately, for some reason, I've just been really getting excited about the surprises that could be out there, both in art and in story. I mean, like, I've talked about this a lot in terms of, you know, while there's some classic artists that I love, you know, with newer artists, the artists that I'm really looking for are the ones that are unlike anybody I've ever seen before, that are doing different things, that are, you know... But from a story wise, you know, I gotta say I'm really and anybody who listens to the show or reads iFanboy.com, it's no surprise. But I'm really, really enjoying, you know, kind of what's going on in comics right now in terms of this idea of new ideas, particularly around what's going on in Image with a lot of the recent creator-owned stuff. You know, last week we talked about Saga number 2. You know, which is, you know, science fiction and romance and Brian K. Vaughan awesomeness. And we've also been talking about what Jonathan Hickman's been doing with last week with Secret number 1 came out, and a month ago when Manhattan Projects number 1 came out. But this week, after, you know, going through 30 comics, many of which are Marvel and DC and many of which were superhero stuff, but then reading, you know, stuff like The Rocketeer and Prophet and then Six Gun and then eventually getting to Manhattan Projects number 2, I realized that, like, man, this is the stuff that I'm most excited about reading. And then after reading Manhattan Projects number 2, I just had to sit back and I was like, this is great, because I never have any idea what's coming in this comic. And to be delighted and surprised by it each time is just something that I'm totally having a blast about. And with Manhattan Projects number 2, Jonathan Hickman takes the concept, and for those who didn't listen to the show when we talked about Manhattan Projects number 1, or if you're not aware of it, the concept is you know, there was the Manhattan Project, which was the American government project to build the atom bomb, and they brought together scientists, and it's very well documented, and folks like Oppenheimer and Einstein and things like that, scientists that participated. And what Hickman's done with that idea is saying, well, what if that was just one project that a whole group in the War Department covered that was called the Manhattan Projects? And what if there was this cabal of American scientists who are helping to further the American effort through science? And we got that great first issue where we were introduced to Oppenheimer and his kind of dual personality, so to speak. And I don't want to – anybody who hasn't read it yet, I don't want to ruin the – even though we spoiled it on the last episode. But this issue did two great things with this issue. One is it introduced us to another scientist, Richard Feynman, who, if you're not aware who Richard Feynman is, he's an American scientist that's best known for his work in quantum physics and quantum mechanics, and a lot of his work has led to quantum computing and things like that. So quantum, that's a key word.
I like in the first two pages there was both Jack Napier and Stuart Smalley. In him.
Yes, yeah, exactly. but so we get introduced to Richard Feynman, who looks to be a key scientist in the Manhattan Projects.
Well, also he's been narrating his opening closing, yeah. Boxes have been from a probably, I assume, fictionalized book of his, so
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
He's going to be really key.
Yeah, exactly. But then it also introduces which we've talked about many a time, the classic timeless villains for comic books, the Nazis. And the issue opens up with the idea with the Nazi scientist, what's his name? Werner
von Braun.
Werner von Braun, who, you know, many people know, and a lot, you know, Hellboy and other comics have really, you know, kind of focused on the Hitler's obsession with the occult and the World War II efforts of the Nazis to get occult items. But in addition to being in reality obsessed with the occult, you know, Hitler and the Nazis were very also conscious of science, and they were trying to build the bomb, and they were trying to build rockets and that sort of thing. So Werner von Braun is Hitler's kind of go-to science guy, and he's got a great mech arm, which is like a robotic arm in the 40s, which is great. And this issue is focused on the idea that, you know, the war is ending. You know, the Nazis are close to surrendering, and so the Manhattan Projects need to go and get the Nazi science secrets, and they need to go capture Wernher von Braun and convert him. And so they send Richard Feynman into Europe to go talk to him, to go make it happen. And every page of this was riveting, as far as I'm concerned. It was just great. From the roundtable discussion of the Manhattan Project scientists, where we get a lot more Albert Einstein, where the first issue we just got a glimpse, and now we just get this weathered, gritty, grim, you know?
He's the key.
Yes.
Here.
Yep.
Like he's going to be the one character, I think, that is like the quiet but all-powerful one, yep. Which I really like. Yeah, also, it should be noted, by the way, this is entirely fictionalized.
Totally fictionalized, yes.
Well, I mean,
if you don't know much about this and you just recognize the names, you know, that ain't Von Braun.
No.
and I just want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah. No, it's taking the idea of – and this is kind of historical fiction, the kind of thing – and this is the kind of thing that I kind of also do love. Like I love the idea of taking – you know, similar to what Fraction did with Five Fists of Science years ago, and you know, everybody was obsessed with Tesla and that sort of thing. But taking an idea – you know, these are real people who existed, and then adding this fantastical fictional element to it that makes it just a blast to read, because it's slightly based in reality, but it's not at the same time as well.
Too is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And he did not have a robot on.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it was just a blast to read. And then furthermore, I thought, you know, this issue further solidified that Nick Patara is not only perfect for this book, but working on a level that I didn't even detect.
Because what I think is nice about him is that you've seen a massive improvement from just the last miniseries.
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't want that to sound like the last one sucked. It's just that he's you know, a young artist who's getting better, which is great.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, he in reading this first issue, you know, you looked at his faces and the way he's, you know, drawing bodies and kind of, you know, the cartooning that was somewhat quietly reminiscent, you know, reminiscent of Frank Quitely as well, you know, some other kind of artist, and he's doing a lot of lines and wrinkles and things like that. And I thought, okay, that's a style. But then I get to this issue, and I see Richard Feynman, who's young and handsome, and his face is totally smooth and clean. And I realized that Patara is paying a ton of attention and visually representing the experience and knowledge and weathering each character has in their physical appearance, which is awesome, which is great, which I didn't even pick up on. You know,
I really liked his design of the robot arm.
Yes.
Yeah. It had it just wasn't a very typical thing. It had like those weird slender finger connectors that were just like wires and it was just unique. And we've seen a lot of robot arms in our time.
What sets us apart, I think, this image, this current image wave than maybe past waves, is that there's as much emphasis on art and story.
Yes.
In the past, maybe the original image wave, You could argue that there wasn't as much emphasis on story as there was on art, and then later books came along. It probably wasn't as balanced as this.
I wouldn't argue that with Rob Liefeld, but
every big book that's come along, at least for me, has been just as much of an art tour de force as a story tour de force. So I think that's really what this sets us one apart, is that it's a complete package you're getting with these books. And this book, it looks as good as it reads. What's interesting to me was that the first issue was really focused on Oppenheimer. I mean, you really set Oppenheimer up as the main character, and whereas here he's pretty much shunted aside except for one small scene. So you really don't know who to follow, who the protagonist is, what the story's going to be.
And I like that.
That's fun, you know, for a while. Eventually you're going to have to figure it out. But, you know, for right now it's very interesting and exciting. As Ron said, you basically have had two different protagonists now. You had Oppenheimer in the first issue and then the new guy in the second issue. So it's interesting to see what he's building on here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then now they're going to add this German scientist to the mix. Like, where is it going? And and what I like about it is it's still early on. Like, if you missed the first issue and you can't track down a second printing or didn't read it digitally, you can pick up this issue and just kind of go with it, I think.
Yeah.
Of course, it helps to know the stuff about Oppenheimer and stuff like that, but, like, it's still accessible and it's still doing, you know, it's like nothing on the stacks right now. It's like nothing on the shelves right now, and that's what I love about it. I do kind of wish the cover wasn't all black because it's just full of fingerprints now.
but it also doesn't actually tell you anything, which I think is any sense of what the issue is from the cover.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't at all.
I just want to go ahead and do it. That before was not a Liefeld dig. I literally just wouldn't want to argue him about that.
Right, yeah. No, I understood that, yeah.
I know, but anybody paying attention at home, not digging on the man.
Yep.
He has more energy for it than me.
Yep. So
he will wear you down.
This is what I'm saying.
Anyway, so I couldn't be more excited for the Manhattan Project. So if you haven't checked it out, I urge you to. If you like, you know, playing with history, if you like, you know, kind of warfare, if you like science, if you like Hitler. I mean, nobody
it's
likes
his birthday
Hitler.
This weekend.
It is, but you know what I mean. And it's so unique. And again, this is, you know, Jonathan Hickman really coming to his own with this creator and stuff. And I just can't. And the design was great. The two page. I love his 2-page title card spreads. It's really, really something to keep an eye on. So big fan of it. So Manhattan Project number 2. Check it out if you haven't yet.
I think somewhere that Hitler's got a relative that's really mad that they're not getting any royalties from his appearances and everything.
I know. Well, you know,
he's like, I won't buy anything. They use his likeness in everything, and we do not get a dime.
Well, he's probably got a great niece out there who's trying to explain to everybody that he's really not as bad as everyone thinks.
That's an uphill battle right there.
Trying to clear his name. So Avengers vs. X-Men Round 2, issue number 2 came out. Connor, you've been the most excited for this series. So how is this going for you so far?
Well, one of the best things I think about comics is that you've got a really wide range of stories you can tell. And they can be told greatly. I think the Manhattan Project is a great issue. And I thought also the Avengers vs. X-Men so far has been is great fun. And it's just different kinds of comics being told in the same medium. Which I think is what's wonderful about comics,
and I totally do agree with you. And just so everyone knows, in the AVX block, we're going to talk about Avengers vs. X-Men number 2, Wolverine the X-Men number 9, and Avengers 25, which all have the AVX banner. And I think that it's interesting in that you get. I felt as if you got three widely varying, different kind of approaches. And Avengers vs. X-Men number 2, like I'm not going to say event fatigue, and I'm not going to whatever like that, but. I'm not feeling it.
See, yeah. I think that I don't agree that they're different. I think the tone in Avengers vs. X-Men, the tone in the Avengers were very similar in that they were throwback to like an 80s style of comic writing.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed greatly because to me this harkens back to Secret Wars, that kind of thing.
Well, that was also my point with part of my self-realization is that like I bet you 15, 16-year-old Ron totally loving this.
Or 32-year-old Ron.
Not even 32. I mean, thirty-something Ron. I feel like I read Avengers vs. X-Men 2, and comparing it to Wolverine vs. Wolverine the X-Men number 9, which is both issues were written by Jason Aaron. The difference in AVX number 2 is that the story was by Aaron, Bendis, Brubaker, Hickman, and Fraction, as well as I'm sure Axel and all the editors and all that, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, there's
Alan Fine.
There's 1, 2, 3, 4, five editors involved in this.
Do not discount Alan Fine.
Yeah, and Alan Fine. but the scripted by Jason Aaron, and we're huge fans of Jason Aaron. But I just felt like Avengers vs. X-Men number 2 just felt contrived, and I sat there, you know, I'm like, why are they fighting? And the fact that like there's actually a line where Spider-Man goes Avengers vs. X-Men, this is actually happening. It just seems too aware of itself, and it just seems almost too obvious. Whereas Wolverine and the X-Men number 9, I thought talk about like I got the most excited for this event just in those first two pages of Wolverine and the X-Men with the aliens gambling and betting on what planet the Phoenix is going to destroy. Like and I got super excited for this whole event just by reading it through Wolverine and the X-Men. Which I thought was different, you know, like, which was unique. So I don't know. It's rough for me. Maybe I'm beyond, you know, like it's. I don't know. Not that I'm beyond it, because I do see the fun in it. I don't know.
To me, it touches on everything I did as a kid when I took all my action figures and dumped them on the floor and in the summertime and played with them. And that's really what the fun of this is. It touches that part of.
He only played with his toys in the summer.
Well, that's when you didn't
winter.
Have
the so winter was a dour time.
You could play. You could play 8 hours a day when you were a kid, but. You know, it really touches that part of you, and I think you know it's good, but it's got to be well done. And I think right now you've got a well done event book, which is a big summer action movie.
And I love Romita. I thought it looked great. I just thought the an issue of all just everybody fighting just seemed a little tedious, and
what it is.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah,
and I am not. I'm not reading it because I know that's what it is, and I know I'm not the audience for it, and that's cool.
Yeah.
It's fine. On the other side, and tell me if I'm getting ahead of things, but I picked up Avengers 25 because I wanted to see the Simon Center. I haven't read Avengers in a really long time. I just had enough of it, and I was a little hesitant because I didn't want the AVX banner, but it's funny because it didn't really feel like it felt like a one shot.
Well, this is the bridge between what I mean. Yeah. I mean, Bendis is still telling the story. The Norman. This is the picking up the pieces of the Norman Osborn story somewhat.
But. So, the thing that Connor mentioned that caught on immediately was from the look of the book to even the style. This didn't feel like a regular Bendis book. This felt like an 80s comic book with the Avengers in it, and I had a hell of a good time with it.
Yep.
I enjoyed the art immensely. I thought that, you know, these are the kind of layouts that I love to see in a book like this. It was bombastic. It was it was big. And it was fun, and it was written in such a way that it wasn't taking itself way too seriously. My favorite part of this entire issue was there down in the training room, and then all of a sudden in one panel, Spider-Woman is just making out with Clint.
Yeah.
out of nowhere. Yep. Just full on like grabbing face and ass. Oh, so you guys are together now? That's all. You know, just no reason.
I think that dramatic. Works in the book's favor and AVX's favor is that they're treating it like a big bombastic old school Marvel story.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whether that's to your taste or not is up to everyone to decide. But I think I think I think it's a good one. I mean, the way AVX was written, you know, it wasn't. Jason Aaron is really talented in that he wrote a completely different style than he wrote with every other book, and it was written in a very bombastic. You could call it Claremont and you could call it Stan Lee-esque, however you want to call it, but in a very bombastic old school Marvel style. And I think if that's the way they're going to go with it, I think it's a good choice.
Yep.
I have the sort of AIM soldiers, the faceless AIM soldiers were fantastic in this also. Like they're just like, there's something going on. Do you want to, like, they're completely ineffectual.
Yeah.
They can't do anything. They don't make decisions. They can barely see out of that thing.
Yeah. But and going back to Wolverine and the X-Men number 9, I mean, it just this book is just so special.
Yeah,
this book absolutely is so good. I mean, Chris Pachalo on art, and this is kind of these are the moments leading up to AVX number 1 and number 2, like where Captain America comes to talk to Wolverine, and then they leave to go to go to Utopia. But it's done in the point of view and the context of the school, as it should be, of Wolverine and the school. And you get, this great little Toad moment, and you got, everyone's kind of everybody else's reaction to the Phoenix threat. And I just like this book is just so good. It's just it's another case of defying the odds. Like, I can't believe how good this book is and how it's existing without getting, not getting messed with yet.
it fights with Fantastic Four for me as the best Marvel book.
Yes.
I mean, they're both up equally, I think, good. And it's, again, completely different style than what everything else Jason Aaron writes. It's very, very funny.
I think it's cool that if you like Jason Aaron's work, you don't necessarily have to like everything he does because it's so varied.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things, like, there's some writers that you have to read everything they do. Like, with Aaron, you can sort of pick and choose. Well, I like this flavor of Aaron and not this one.
Well, and what totally draws me to Wolverine the X-Men, and which is no surprise or whatever, but it's got so much heart. Like, yep. That's the thing. Like, it's about Wolverine protecting these kids, and it's about learning, and it's about like all this sort of stuff. And it's that level of emotion that I've always liked about the X-Men, and that has been really kind of absent for the past few years. And it's great that even with the banner, it's still keeping. Look, Michael Banner. Even with the banner, it's still sticking with that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
sorry.
Jesus, I should have known better.
I've been watching it again. It doesn't get old. It just gets better.
Yeah. Anyway, so AVX. I don't know. I'm gonna stick with it because because it's my it's Marvel and it's all that sort of stuff. But it just looking at AVX number 2 or Manhattan Projects, I got more excited about Manhattan Projects.
Batman number 8 is the start of the start of its own crossover, the Night of the Owls, which also had Nightwing this week. And for me, this might have been my favorite issue of Batman so far, considering.
Really? It was a very good issue.
Yeah.
You really felt the noose tightening and the walls closing in on Batman and Alfred. And they did a great job of writing. You know, in this issue, all the Talons were unleashed last issue. So in this issue, they attack Wayne Manors, the whole army of Talons. And, you know, even Batman's overwhelmed by all these Talons. And so it really is almost a locked room issue, even though it takes other scenes in it, in that, if you're trapped in the Wayne Manor, it's under siege, what do you do? And you really felt that sense of dread and sort of claustrophobia from the way it was written.
Yeah.
In that, they kept fighting at the smaller and smaller rooms until finally they had to take recourse in the armory. Yeah. And it was really well constructed in that sense, and that the fight got smaller and smaller and smaller until you sort of felt that as a reader.
Yeah.
And then the backup I thought was wonderful.
The backup was great. I thought Albuquerque, so good.
It was really gorgeous.
Yeah.
And apparently what they're doing here is, in the backup issue, there's a two-page spread where Alfred contacts all of the Bat family for help. And you follow those little panels into their other books. So like that's how the Nightwing books, you know, connects, is that he hears the call for help, and that's where that happens. So if you want to follow the stories, you can follow it through those. If not, you just continue to read with just the Batman book, which I think will be fine.
Yeah. I love the bat flamethrower armor or whatever he's in, which is awesome.
Yeah, I gotta say the backup looked real good. Not only Albuquerque but Fairbairn. I thought the colors were sort of really nice. In the first half of it, you know, like we've said a lot of really nice things about Capullo, but these issues are actually getting stronger as he keeps going. I feel like he's getting more comfortable with these characters in this world. And if you were to go back and look at the first issue that he did, I think this is much stronger than that. Even just the first page, which is just it's a series of street shots, basically mm-hmm. moving up. It's basically the Watchmen technique. But I was like, I was impressed by that.
Speaking of the Watchmen, how great would it be if the Night of the Owls ends with a Night Owl just going appearing? And
it was me. I'm the owl.
And then the comic universe unfolds on itself, and we all.
You know what? I want to see that.
That would be awesome.
I would really love to see the ripple effect from that bad boy.
Oh, just everybody would go crazy. I love it.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna say something that might be controversial, may not be controversial, but Justice League number 8, I thought was the best issue of the series, and I thought was the first time I haven't had a really, you know, major complaint about the series. I thought this was an excellent starting point. Maybe this should have been the starting point of the series. But I thought this sort of knocks away a lot of the problems I had with it before and really moves it forward.
Okay.
I probably was the only one reading it.
No, I read it. I read it. I don't know if I agree, but yeah.
In this issue, we're basically... well, the art is handled by it's Carlos De Anda, which would be my only complaint, because he's you know, he's solid. But although Ivan Reese does a segment in the back, which is excellent, and then the Gary Frank stuff is awesome, of course.
And what about it says Carlos De Anda with Ivan Reese and Joe Prado and guest artist Gabe Edelub with Alex and Claire. So like it's an art. There's a whole bunch of art going on.
No, those are the colorists.
Are those the colorists? The
names are above the titles.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you're right. Guest artists. Those are the colorists. Okay. Anyway, the Ivan Reese stuff stood out. Like the changeover to that was like I would read an Ivan Reese Justice League book in a second.
Yeah.
That two page spread of the Justice League fighting Martian Manhunter was awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Carlos De Anda stuff was not that good.
It was okay. That would be my only thing holding it back from being a really excellent book, because it was Workman. You know, it did its job.
Yeah.
But I thought it did a good job of establishing the team now, better than the last couple of issues. I thought it did a good job of setting up a mystery in that they tried to recruit Martian Manhunter. It didn't take. He's still in the background. He thinks, you know, he knows something's coming they need to address, but they're not ready for it.
Yep.
And again, it brings in the Green Arrow. I thought it did a really good job of sort of establishing all the characters in the new world better than they've done in the past.
Yeah, and I can see that. And honestly, I really, really, really like the Shazam backup.
The Shazam backup is wonderful.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really.
I know everyone's complaining, but this seems to be the patented Geoff Johns technique of bringing a character in a way you don't like or yep. recognize, and then by the end of the story, he'll be the character you recognize. So yep. I think, you know, it's going to be a lesson for Billy Batson in how to become a good man or a good kid or whatever you want to call it. But yep. So. Gorgeous, just really well done backup yep. story.
Excellent. Cool. So con season is upon us, and if you are in the Midwest, you better be planning on going to the Summit City Comic Con on May 12th in Fort Wayne, Indiana at the Grand Wayne Center. I don't believe Bruce Wayne owns the Grand Wayne Center, but there you go. Batman, tie-in, Wayne, Bruce Wayne.
Well, I'm just impressed you were able to say Grand Wayne and not Gwen Wayne.
Gwen Wayne.
The Grand Wayne Center.
So Summit City Comic Con is a great smaller show, but totally focused on creators and comics focused. No other stuff. It's just pure comics. If you love comics, you definitely want to hit it. They've got over 100 creators appearing, including Jeff Darrow, Gabe Hardman, Mike Norton, Tom Scioli, Robert Atkins, Hilary Barda, and Katie Cook. It's just $10 to get in. That's it. It's $10. Kids 12 and under get in for free. So if you bring the kids, you get a sketch from Kitty Cook. They'll love it. They will. It'll be a great time for everybody, for the whole family. So if you're looking for something to do on May 12th, go to the Summit City Comic Con. You can get full details, directions, ticket information, full guest list, everything else, all at their website at summitcitycomiccon.com. That's summitcitycomiccon.com. And we hope they all have a good time come this May. Excellent. So Rocketeer Adventures 2, number 2 came out. And it was funny because it's like I think when the first issue came out, we were saying how, you know, should they really have done another anthology, and is it really, you know, kind of delivering whatever? But I love this issue. I didn't
get this one, not because I didn't want to. It was just a snafu.
Yeah.
But who?
So the first story was a story by Tom Taylor with art by Colin Wilson, which, if you're not familiar with Colin Wilson's work, really, really good, really strong. A very emotional World War II story, a Rocketeer during World War II, which was really good. At a great little moment towards the end. Then you get a fun Cliff being jealous of Betty acting story by Paul Dini with art by Bill Morrison. And so really, you know, like, you know, she's got a role in a serial, and there's a handsome leading man, and Cliff's jealous, and you know, that kind of story. And then the last story is written by Walt Simonson and with art by John Paul Leone. And it's a great Hollywood-esque story where some shenanigans going on. Rocketeer ends up saving an actress, and it turns out to be Judy Garland. And, you know, very, very, you know, reminder of the Rocketeer in that 30s, you know, L.A. kind of wonderful kind of Hollywood, you know, kind of world. Just reminds me. I don't know what it is, but I just love the Rocketeer. I love it. So, and a great Darwin Cook cover. So,
I think he's doing all of them, isn't he?
Yeah.
That was a smart move.
Yeah. So I'm loving the Thunderbolts 15-year celebration with the and playing bringing in the original Thunderbolts team.
I liked when they just decided to start having a party and drinking together almost immediately.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, what's going on? Like, everything about the space-time continuum and everything that's weird about it went away with the turn of a page.
Yep, exactly. They just had a part. And it's funny because this reminded me, and going back to what I was earlier saying about new ideas, like, 15 years ago, I loved the Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was a new idea. It was great. It was fun. It's so special. And, like, to be revisiting it and kind of re-celebrating it and have it still be just as strong 15 years later, I think is great. This is, like, such a under-the-radar kind of legacy that I'm glad that they're celebrating.
Yeah. I think the last, you know, for a while, all the stuff that Jeff Parker's been doing on here has felt very fresh and very fun. And he's really been skirting that sort of high adventure superhero comic and then just a bit of a tongue-in-cheek wink of how it's a little silly at the same time. And they've just been super fun issues.
Yeah. And it just reminds me how much I miss Zemo.
Mm-hmm.
Zemo was great. It was such a great – that Citizen V – The whole setup was fantastic. So, but and the thing is that it's not just a nostalgia trip. I like the current team too.
Oh yeah,
And I like the challenges and the questions that are coming of it. I think it's a really great direction and just in time for it to all get ruined.
Yeah, it's interesting that it changed too. Like in terms of like the team changed. At first, it was a Luke Cage book, you know, and now it's not that, and it's survived all those things.
Yeah, totally. So. So and shocking ending. So talk about time travel. Yeah. But anyway. So did you guys check out the Six Gun number 21?
Always.
Yeah?
Always.
I don't know if the Six Gun needs to do a G.I. Joe tribute.
I was probably a third of the way through it before I was like, hey, Silent Issue. It's not a G.I. Joe tribute.
It is. Look at the cover and look at the inside cover. Look at the inside.
Oh, I guess you're right. Okay.
With respect to Larry Hama, Steve Laiola, George Russo, and Klaus Janson, it's totally a tribute.
Did somebody get rescued?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a G.I. Joe tribute. That's the story.
No, it was. You're right. Well, at first I just thought it was a Silent Issue, and my point was that not all Silent Issues are necessarily, but you're right about the cover. That is.
No, the cover and the whole issue was a tribute to the G.I. Joe issue.
Is it the same? Like the layouts?
No, I've read that issue in years, but I don't think it's exactly the same to the note. But
I gotta say that one of the things that I totally dug this. This was a really fun Silent Issue, I thought. But one of the things that was really cool was when they got outside and there's an architecture to this compound that they're in.
Oh, and, it is G.I. Joe.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's all these like buildings up on stilts and all these bridges in between them and the action sequences were just really, really well choreographed and the sort of setup of the whole place was consistent and fun. And I was just like, that's a lot of work is what I kind of realized. And
the storytelling was tight. I loved there. So basically it's the, what's her name? The woman,
Becky.
Becky is rescuing Drake, who's been captured, and I love that he's hanging upside down, shirtless, with a cage around his head, and they're putting crab, like these weird crab monsters in the cage with him.
Yeah.
And then she lets him free, and then he just puts all the five guns in his belt. It's just like I love the mythology of the Six Guns, and I love like the, you know, there was a whole bunch of mud golems, and just like I love it, it just it, yeah, it's
got four guns.
Four
she
guns.
She has yeah. one. So yeah. one of them is somewhere else. I don't remember where.
Yeah. But yeah, the storytelling in this was really sound. No problem did I not understand what was going on. It was a great action sequence. You got a Gatling gun, which is always fun. So yeah, it was good. It was, but I was like, do you really know to go this far? Like when I saw the cover, I was like, really? It's
you know, it's long enough ago. It's long ago enough now that that only people like you are going to know that, which is everybody.
Yeah,
in
yeah
it's a pretty famous G.I. Joe cover.
Yeah.
No, I know, but that's like when did that come out? You know. Early 25 years ago?
83, 84, yeah.
So almost 30 years ago?
Yeah.
It's okay.
So real quickly, Prophet number 24 continues to be one of the best, at least in my mind, best, you know, exciting, you know, things. Well,
this is like we mentioned earlier. It's a great story and great art. It's completely unpredictable.
Completely unpredictable. And my two thoughts on this was, first off, this issue, it's not drawn by Simon Roy, who was the starting artist on Prophet, but this is drawn by Farrell Dalrymple, who I'm a huge fan of. And he actually collaborated with Brandon Graham on the story as well, so that's pretty cool. So the art is just great. It's great to see Dalrymple like have a lot of fun with this kind of material. But then reading this, I realized like this is scratching that Jodorowsky-esque itch. Like the same reason why I like the Inkle and like that those mm-hmm. wild kind of crazy stuff. I'm not saying it's like, and I'm not bringing Mobius into the picture at all or whatever. But I'm not saying it's like the Inkle or anything like that. But it's that like out there, completely foreign. Don't know, like you said, don't know what to expect kind of story that I love. I love it.
Yeah, in this issue we find the new guy to follow who is the same as the old guy, but this one has a tail.
Yes.
And then he meets it's bizarre. Yeah. It's bizarre in the best possible way.
Yep. Exactly.
What is Prophet about? I don't know.
Yeah,
but it's awesome. I don't care.
Now, conversely, if you were to ask me what Batman Odyssey is about, I don't know, and I don't care either. But issue 7 and the last issue of Neil Adams's Odyssey, so to speak, and it was just
did it wrap it up in a nice tight little bow that made it all make sense?
Ridiculous. Basically, it all culminates in a fight between Batman and Ra's al Ghul's son, who doesn't have the Lazarus Pit formula, so he's old and he's become the sensei figure. And Batman and him fighting while all of Batman's rogue galleries are in cells watching. And Batman takes his cape off and finally says, "This is it. I've had it. No more. New rules in my city. No more." And he asks Robin to hand him his gun. And while all the villains are watching and they're going, "No, he can't. He's not going to." No, Batman shoots the sensei in the back and his chest explodes with blood. And Batman yells and all the villains get the Joker and Two-Face and they all get the Scarecrow gets horrified. They're all afraid. And Batman yells at them and goes, "That's it. If you kill anyone, I will track you down and kill you dead. You saw what happened. Be warned."
Jesus.
And you're like, Jesus, oh my God. And then it fast forwards, and remember how each issue started with Batman telling somebody what was happening?
Yeah.
Turns out he was telling Clark Kent. And turns out the sensei was in on the trick, and he had squibs, and he didn't shoot him. It was blanks, and it was a whole big ruse. And now Clark Kent is going to go write the story.
Oh my God.
But that said, the last panel was Neil Adams drawing Superman flying out of the Batcave, which was
Nice.
Which was pretty cool. Yeah. So
did he have red briefs?
Yes.
Okay.
It was ridiculous. It was so ridiculous. It was fantastic. Connor, you need to go find this issue just to see the pages, the two-page spreads.
I think I need to. I'll go look through it the next time I go to the store.
Oh, by the way, he is in red briefs, but they're severely shadowed.
Yeah.
Look at that. See? But he's got the yellow belt, so yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. I do love the crazy.
You do. That's what we thought of the books from the week. We're not done. We want to talk a little bit about what you thought, the iFanboy community. So let's go through the top five picks of the week as chosen by the users of iFanboy.com. And keep in mind that these may change by the time that you hear them.
It's been changing by the minute, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're so close in the middle. Yeah.
And of course, we all know who number one's going to be because it came out this week. But we'll get there. Uncanny X-Force number 24 with 2.2%. Nightwing number 8 with 2.6% comes in fourth. Wonder Woman number 8, 3% of you chose his pick of the week. Manhattan Projects number 2 with 11.1% is the second choice to go with Ron's choice. And Batman number 8 with 66.5% because Scott Snyder's issues of Batman have never done less than 60%, I don't think, ever.
Amazing, amazing.
Connor, tell us about what LeBon thinks of Supergirl.
LeBon reviewed Supergirl number 8 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and 0.2% of you made this your pick of the week. And LeBon says, I will admit that the majority of the New 52 have not been meeting, let alone exceeding my expectation, but Kara is still in my heart. I enjoyed the feel of classic superhero title artwork that George Perez brought to the table, but not quite as much as the previous 7 issues worth of art, so the art only gets a 4. The story, however, gets a 5, and hopefully will stay there for many issues to come. For the top of my pile, hopefully into yours, give Kara a chance and try Supergirl if you haven't yet. George Perez was the guest artist in this issue, and I didn't get it because my store got shorted a bunch of books, and so I didn't get a bunch of books, including Supergirl.
But Mahmoud Asrar is still the regular artist, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. And what this review basically just said was Mahmoud Asrar is better than George Perez.
which I can get behind that.
it's just different, completely different styles.
Yeah, no, totally.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. But yeah, Mockwood's great. I love seeing this stuff. So cool.
I got to the store and I was like, they couldn't have sold out. I mean, it's only been an hour.
And it's Supergirl.
Yeah. I was like, really? Supergirl sold out?
Was there a run on Supergirl?
Supergirl, Captain Atom, and a couple other books? It seems unlikely, but all right. That's what happened. Didn't sell out.
Akamu reviewed Uncanny X-Force number 24, giving the story a 5 out of 5 and the arty 5 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage is 1.6%, which has changed actually since I've been up on the page.
Oh yeah, it has. Jeez.
Maybe 2.2%. And he says, I don't remember when I've been as grateful to see an artist back on a title as I am to see Noto, as in Phil, on Uncanny X-Force. His page 2 alone was worth the price of this book. As great as Noto's art is, Remender's use of AOA, or Age of Apocalypse, Iceman is brilliant. I'd love to see 616 Iceman use his powers in this fashion. I'm thrilled that this book seems to be back at the level it was for the first few story arcs and that they're tying it to the other X books.
Phil Noto, we rave about in the weekly sketchup all the time, but Phil Noto colored by Dean White, it's with the slight style variation, this doesn't look like your average Phil Noto. And
it's actually the best sequential Phil Noto I've seen.
Yes, agreed.
I think ever.
Yep.
Yeah. So I haven't loved his sequential work before. He does great pinups,
yep,
which we talk about all the time on iFanboy in this weekly SketchUp feature. But in terms of storytelling, this was great. And then the panel-to-panel stuff was wonderful. I thought this was great.
Yeah, it was excellent. It was fantastic. Love it. That's great. Cool. So go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can do your pull list and rate your books and write your reviews and get one on the show. All right. So before we get to your email and voicemail, we're going to talk about the April book of the month. Delayed by a couple weeks, but we made it. We made it by tax time. And this book of the month,
delayed this year by a couple of days. Yeah. So
this month's book of the month for me was X-Men Season 1, written by Dennis Hopeless with art by Jamie McKelvey. And this is part of Marvel's Season 1 initiative where they are doing single graphic novels, doing modern retellings of the origins of their classic characters. And there's something about that topic that makes comic fans groan.
Because this is a whole other topic, but comics did this all the time.
Yes.
They used to, every few years, retell the origin in a new context.
Yep.
But the problem is, at some point, comic readers stopped leaving comics and just stayed forever, and they freak out whenever there's retelling the origin, which is what comics have always done.
Now,
because they used to change the audience over, so they'd have to retell the origin for the new audience.
Right, yeah, exactly. So as far as I'm concerned, X-Men Season 1, and the thing was is that you've seen widely varying results with these Season 1 books.
Yes,
Fantastic Four and Daredevil and Spider-Man, stuff like that. They've all, you know, like, whatever.
Spider-Man hasn't come out yet.
Spider-Man hasn't come out, correct. But the other ones that have come out. And if you ask me, X-Men Season 1 has been the best one yet.
Far away.
Both not only in execution, and it's no surprise that I'm a huge Jamie McKelvey fan, and Jamie McKelvey drawing my favorite characters is like slam dunk. But honestly, I think Dennis Hopeless with the story did the best, and McKelvey along with the art, did the best job of being able to tell an X-Men story that I can hand to a new reader and say, this is the X-Men, and at the same time satisfy the enjoyment of me as a classic X-Men fan to feel like they're being done in the right way. Yeah. And that's a delicate balance to make. That's a delicate balance.
It's also somewhat ballsy to do an X-Men book these days and not shoehorn in Wolverine somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I love the fact that it's a classic team. It's the classic original five team. And I love that they didn't try to modernize in any way beyond that. It was just the classic guys in the modern day, which I thought was wonderful.
Yeah. And the book opens with Jean Grey joining the team, and you see a lot of the majority of the book is told through Jean Grey's eyes as she's the last member of the original five to join. It plays with time a lot. We get a lot of flash forwards and flashbacks. The main conflict is around the emergence of Magneto and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants and how the X-Men are dealing with them and the complicated relationship between Magneto and Xavier. You also get little glimpses of each of the individual X-Men and get an idea of where they're coming from, kind of their origins in and of itself. You lay the groundwork for the effect that Jean has on the team. They're teenagers, and so all the boys go gaga over her, and then you get Warren flirting with her and Cyclops liking her from afar, and then the development of her and Cyclops' relationship. You get varying maturity lessons and levels from the different characters. Iceman is the youngest and the most immature, and he does a lot of maturing within this story alone. But what was great was I thought what Dennis Hopeless did was he added in the story, he was able to mix in the classic kind of origin telling and the classic key things you need to hit, but then also with little nods to the original Kirby and Lee run, like having them face off against Eunice the Untouchable, which is an old character they don't use that much anymore now. There was a whole X-Men number 18 was Iceman versus Magneto alone, where the whole team was defeated and Iceman was fighting Magneto in the mansion. And they basically nodded to that through a couple of pages. But as an X-Men fan, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. So, and like that's just such a great way to win a fan like me over. But then by being able to tell this in a modern, realistic way, like I think this could be the bridge book for a whole new generation of X-Men fans. Without a doubt, you hand this book to anybody and they know what the X-Men are. And it's done in a dynamic, relatable kind of way.
Especially anybody who's young now.
Yeah.
It sounds lame to be like, well, they're wearing modern clothes, they've got iPhones. But really the hardest thing to do to grab a kid for the majority of kids, and obviously this doesn't go for everybody, but is to hand them a Lee Kirby book and say, yeah, here, enjoy, teenager. And it's tough. I mean, some will, but not most won't.
Further than that, a lot of modern artists don't draw kids very well, or what they're wearing, or the world that they're in.
And they don't seem real, which they do here.
Yeah, I mean, I've read stuff recently, like stuff that's come out in the last year, where they have people wearing clothes that nobody would wear. Really like bad 8-button suits. Things like Arsenio Hall's suit. But in this, that's what it was. There's a recent comic, but in this, McKelvey's going to know how to make people look like they look.
Well, and he made them look like teenagers. It was completely believable in every scene that these are teenagers.
I haven't gotten all the way through this. I've read the first chapter or so of it. Yeah. But I thought that McKelvey actually made a lot of strides in his art. Yeah. I've read all of his indie stuff, and I've read bits of his Marvel stuff here and there. But I thought it was really strong. I thought it was a lot stronger than some of the stuff. The last thing I read was the Secret of Avengers issue, which was excellent. That was the best I'd ever seen. Yeah. But this was along those lines, I thought.
Yeah, it was great. It was so great to see, and I'm so glad that of all the season one books, that the X-Men one is the best one. So yay! So go to iFanboy.com. Read my
all those strides you made at the beginning of the show. You just totally undermined them.
No, totally. Yeah. It's very hard to be me.
I want new things. Now let's talk about a revamp of something I'm so familiar with that I don't even need to read it.
I appreciate the irony. So go to ifanboy.com, read the full my full review of it, and go check out X-Men Season 1. I was going to say X-Men First Class. Go check out X-Men Season 1.
That was a class in really gracefully taking ridicule.
Yes.
I've got to say, because, argue with that. That's
X-Men First Class was also a really good book by Jeff Parker.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was great. Doing something very similar as well, too. Yep. So, yeah. Cool. So on to we're going to skip emails this week because we were talking about the book of the month and we got a packed show. But on to the voicemails. And our first voicemail is something about a movie coming out soon.
What's going on, fellas? Sean from New York over here. Just wondering if you're excited about the Avengers movie, because I started off very apprehensive with Thor wearing a lot of eye makeup in the early trailers. Now it's looking pretty sweet. So just curious what you thought, because I had the same experience with Green Lantern. The later trailers are better and better. And it was horrible. Also, what's with Captain America? I really didn't like that movie, but everyone else seemed to. Who knows? Have a good one, fellas.
Green Lantern went through that arc where we were apprehensive, and then we talked ourselves into it as the trailers came out, and then it blew up in our faces. But I think the difference here is that
I've never been apprehensive.
No, but no, I'm not apprehensive either. But the difference here is that there's no bad buzz on this movie, whereas I heard a lot of bad buzz for Green Lantern going into it, but I was hoping it was wrong.
Well, we're at a point. Well, first off, I mean, in terms of excitement, I'm excited. I mean,
oh, I'm really excited. By the time you hear this, I'll have seen the movie.
Yeah, so yeah. Well, I was gonna get that, but I was gonna say so the movie's premiered. We've spoken to several folks who have seen it. A lot of the comic creators that were in the LA area got to go to the big LA premiere, and some other premieres have happened. And I've not heard a bad thing from anyone, from people who I trust.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, I've heard things from people who I don't know are anonymous, but people I actually know, I've met, whose opinions I think are interesting, have all said it's been really great. So yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. This is, you know, it's funny because I'm looking forward to The Dark Knight Rises too, but in a different way because I know what I'm getting with that movie, whereas I have no idea what I'm getting with Avengers. Yeah. So in that way, it's more somewhat slightly more exciting.
And the big thing about Avengers, if you ask me, is that it's Whedon. It's the Whedon X Factor, which is, you know, not only with him directing but him writing. And being such a fan of his work on Buffy and Firefly and all that sort of stuff, it's just like, it's from what I've heard is that like it's real easy to put Iron Man and Thor and Captain America and have a big fight scene, and like anybody can direct that and that will look good. But it's the scenes that bring those together, like the character scenes that Whedon I think is the right touch for it, and that's why I'm so excited for it. So,
what's funny thing is I wasn't that excited. Like I was like, okay, it'll be fine. But it's funny because this is getting treated like. And it probably, rightfully so, like this is the biggest thing that's ever happened to comic book movies. And I guess it kind of is, because this is the thing that, you know, they thought it would never happen. And then they finally, you know, they're pulling it off. But I don't know if I just have been conditioned to not really appreciate that. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the Lincoln movie. But that's a whole other thing.
The Vampire Hunter?
No. Steven Spielberg directed Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis as Lincoln.
The Vampire Hunter?
No, not the fucking vampire. Just
that movie looks good, actually. The Vampire Hunter movie.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Right. Yeah.
Anyway, the point being, like, I was like, I'll go see it, and it's fun. But the things that I have heard from actual people who I guess respect and who wouldn't be saying it if it wasn't true, they're not just getting wrapped up in what would be fanboy hype, basically. Yep. Like, yep. I want to see is Iron Man standing with Thor, like. Yeah. If that's what you're looking forward to, that's easy to solve. But to actually say it's good, which is what I'm hearing, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I am looking forward to it. I'm gonna go to a midnight show. I haven't been to a midnight show in forever.
Yeah. So Connor's seeing it this weekend because he's in LA and he's lucky. I'm actually seeing it next week. But I also got tickets to the midnight show because I want to see it with my friends.
You guys know it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Okay.
Just so you know.
I get to sleep in.
Yeah.
So.
I'm gonna go see an opening night with my friends too, but I'm not doing midnight. I did midnight for Hunger Games. That was a disaster.
Yeah, you wasted a chip there. Not that Hunger Games was bad, but you.
No, the movie was fine, but the next day I was wrecked.
Yeah. not as young as we used to be.
No, I had to get up for work. In the past, I would just be able to sleep in. This time, I had to wake up 3 hours after I went to bed.
Other little question came up about Captain America.
It was awesome.
Captain America was 2/3 fantastic.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, but
I rewatched it about 3 weeks ago. And I enjoyed it just as much.
I would say it was 3/4 fantastic.
Okay, I didn't like the end. But
can you parachute out? No, I gotta crash it. I gotta take this plane down.
The thing is, you're in the middle of nowhere, and you're a super soldier. So
the how it should have ended animation credit. They nailed that. That was. Yeah. all right.
Lots of options.
Yes. On to our next question, a question that we've never talked about.
Hi, fanboy. This is Matt from Minnesota. I've been listening since the TIE Fighter fell, and one of the few topics that you have not ever discussed is subscriptions. It's about the only way that I read comics, and I'd really like to understand your perspective on people that subscribe to comics and how that works, and why more people don't actually get them delivered right to their door. Thanks a lot, guys.
I feel like there is there's a mindset in comics, which because the community is so tight-knit and small that the way that you get comics is you go to the comic store and you buy them because there's nowhere else to get them. Or you get them digitally if you want to do that. But other than that, nobody even thinks to do subscriptions anymore. Honestly, I didn't know that there were still subscriptions.
Well, that's the thing. They're not. I mean, like Marvel got rid of their subscription thing years ago. And DC was the last holdout. As far as I know, the only publisher that still...
Marvel does it. People on our website talk about it all the time.
Really? Does Marvel still do it? No.
Yes.
I think you've got to like search it out. Like, because it used to just be every issue had an ad in it. And when I was a kid, I used to love that ad.
That ad was like my checklist.
Yeah, and you could check it, and like it'd be like, well, like $8, that's a good deal for a year.
Yeah, I know currently Archie still has an active subscription service where they'll mail you the stuff, and that, you know, but I didn't know Marvel does. I gotta look into that.
Well, then the other side of it being that, you know, even for people who are not into collecting, there is still the mentality that if it goes to the mail, it's gonna get banged up, and it is.
Well, what do you know? Subscriptions.marvel.com.
Yeah.
There it is.
You know what? I can see that as being an option.
Well, the thing is, I don't know when you get them.
We can't do it because we have to get the books on Wednesday. Right. They come randomly.
What I was going to say was that there's a mindset of the going to the comic shop on Wednesday and being able to talk to all your friends and if you're worried about that, then you've got to go to the shop. But I thought Marvel didn't do this anymore. I know DC doesn't do it anymore. And I was going to say, folks like the great folks at Discount Comic Book Service, and there are other mail order kind of services that will mail your comics, and you can pick whether you want to get a box a month or every 2 weeks or whatever frequency you want. But it is a viable option to get your comics that way, just not from the publishers directly. But I had no idea Marvel still did it. So you can get 12 issues of The Amazing Spider-Man for $26.97. That's savings up to 48%. They're discounted pretty well.
Yeah.
I had no idea. But what about all the double shipping?
Well, the 24 issues of Spider-Man, that only lasts you, 12 issues of Spider-Man only lasts you 4 weeks.
Apparently, my cart, I've already got Wolverine and Amazing Spider-Man in my cart. I've never been on this page before ever.
Josh, didn't you have subscriptions at one point in your life?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I did it. I liked that page, and even back then, I was pretty economically minded. I was like, well, look, I could, if I just get Thor like this. I remember I described a Thor and I think Wolverine, and they just came they came in a little plastic bag in the mail, and they were kind of banged up. I went to the shop the other day, and I was like, I don't see Hellblazer out there, and he was like, oh yeah, ours were damaged. I was like, well, let me see what that means. And it was like a little crease in the cover. I was like, I don't give a shit about this. Give me the book.
Yeah, I had this. I've had that before. They have on the Marvel subscription site, they have a way to pick a comic. So age range, kids or young adult. That's it. Okay. And then familiarity of comics. New reader, former reader, longtime reader. Character family, the various character families.
They've got somebody on staff who deals with this as their job.
Show me the books that are Marvel staff picks, funny, gritty, traditional, or team comics. It's so weird. Anyway, so. All right, cool, interesting. So, yeah, I guess that's a way to do it. I mean,
there's nothing wrong with it either. I mean, it's just another way to get comics. If you don't care about getting your comics when everyone else or most everyone else does, and if you want to save a lot of money, that's certainly a good way to do it.
Yeah.
We couldn't do it as long as we're doing this, but, other people certainly can.
Yeah, so. Cool. So if you have any questions, you can call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Or you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, send an email, and get your question answered on the show. All right, cool. So if this isn't enough comic book fun for you, on Monday we have another podcast called iFanboy Don't Miss, which is where we talk to a creator about an upcoming comic book that's coming out this Wednesday that you absolutely can't miss when you go to the shop or when you do your subscriptions. This week our buddy Chris Niesman is talking to writer Cullen Bunn, who embarks on his run on Wolverine number 305, and starts this Wednesday as Jason Aaron has ended his run and Cullen Bunn takes the reins. So here Chris talked to Cullen about what he's got lined up for Wolverine.
Cool. You can also listen to the Make Comics podcast, which I do normally with Andy Schmidt, but for the last couple of weeks I've had some guests. I had other comics experience instructors. We talked with Robert Atkins about his
diet.
Yeah. I couldn't eat anything that I wanted. It was awful during the whole show. No, about what an artist should have in their portfolio and what that means and how important that is. And then this week I spoke with Chris Sotomayor, a colorist. You've seen him color a lot of Marvel books, about becoming a colorist, what that takes, what that means, what's behind it. Two, more really interesting conversations. And then a week ago, I even did a sort of longer one with a couple of artists. So you should check those out. Next week, we'll be back with another show. I don't know what it's about yet. So there it is. Usually Wednesday morning. It was a little late this week because of outside circumstances. I'm not going to make excuses.
Yeah, no need to.
Yeah.
All right. And you can find that, as well as Don't Miss, as well as the Book of the Month review, my Pick of the Week review, and all the other great comic book stuff, all at ifanboy.com. Go there. You can get the in-depth discussion that's happening daily. Great written post by the whole iFanboy staff of writers. And you can follow everybody. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see that full staff and get their social network links and follow us around the world. If you want to stay in touch with iFanboy, follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/ifanboy or on facebook.com/ifanboy.
If you want to email us, you can write to contact@ifanboy or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions, comments, or concerns. If you're leaving a voicemail, make sure, you know, we got to play it on the air, so don't go on forever. Dudes, today, those were some good emails. They were both 29 seconds.
Voicemails.
That's what I meant, voicemails.
Yep.
There were no good emails today.
There were some good emails, but yeah, but anyway.
Well, we'll read those later.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's how you get it done. Make sure you let us know who you are, what your name is, and where you're from also. Yeah. And other than that, have fun.
And finally, if you enjoy the show, please consider going to iTunes and writing a review for this show, for our other podcasts, for any podcast you listen to. It's a great way to help people find shows that you think are good and you want to have them get more bigger audience to help them keep going. Then the best way to do that is to write a review on iTunes. It doesn't cost you anything. It only takes a few moments. So please do that for all podcasts everywhere.
All of them.
Except for Josh's podcast.
Yes, never. Yeah.
I don't. Do I even have a podcast? I appeared on Paul's podcast.
You were on Fuzzy Typewriter. If you want to hear Josh talk about Justified.
Go write a nice review of that. So
yes.
All right, cool. Well, that was a great week of comics. I can't wait for next week. Until then, I am Ron.
I'm Connor.
I can probably wait for next week. I got some stuff.
Sometimes I don't know what comes out of my mouth.
Yeah, you just like hype. I can't wait. Totally exciting. See you later. What'd you say? I'm not sure. It just all came out. Bye.
See you next week.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/ifanboy.